You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is questions pooled from Instagram, Brian_Keane_fitness, and from the website, briankeanefitness.com. So I know a lot of you are reading the blog on the website. So if you're a reader, definitely go on to briankeanefitness.com/blog at the end of this episode. Listen to the episode first and then head over. But if you enjoyed The Fitness Mindset, my best-selling book, there's some expanded ideas on there with either fitness, mindset. And I've got quite a lot of business stuff up there as well for personal trainers and people in business in general. How to run your social media, how to run your business. Just been putting out a lot of that content recently just off the back of working with some of my mentees and the business program that I may be running in the coming months. So that mentorship program is now full. So I'm not taking anybody else on for that for the next several months. But I am building a program on the back end now to try and basically just work with the demand of personal trainers and fitness people that want to work with me. So again, you can send on an email, Brian@BrianKeaneFitness.com. If you're a personal trainer or a fitness person, I can put you on a waiting list for that new program, which will probably launch in November. We're building it now. It'll be an online program, an online module course. But just send me an email and I'll keep your email on file and I'll send you details before that comes out. So that's Brian@BrianKeaneFitness.com, or just head over to the website. And again, as I said, you can send in questions via the website too. On the contact form for the podcast, there is a podcast question section. And you can send in questions on there as well. Again, filtering some of them and picking the ones that I think can provide the most value to people. So if you have any questions, you can send it in on there. And we'll kick off today's Q&A. So first one comes in from Keen Burke 96. What's your morning recovery strategy? So I'm big on morning routines in general. And I've spoken about those in the podcast in the past, so I'm not going to get into my morning routine in too much detail. But one of the reasons that I ask my guests, what does the first 30 or 60 minutes of their day look like, is because I'm obsessed with owning the morning. Because when you own the morning, you can own the entire day. And one of my biggest changes in direction and how my life has took a different turn in terms of trajectory over the last several years is when I get control of that first hour of the day, I'm able to control the rest of the day, which allows me to achieve a lot more in terms of getting my own priorities done and then responding to the world. So I'm very, very fortunate in terms of the drowning and opportunity of the things that come my way. I'm so grateful that that's the life I get to lead. But there's a great book, and I've forgotten the name, 0 to 1, Peter Thiel, where he speaks about companies or people that will die from indigestion as opposed to starvation. And that's what can happen to me. It can happen to a lot of other of you listening who are that type A personality, where you're climbing ladders either in the corporate world or in the fitness world, where you're training and training and training for an end goal, where you're very, very focused and you can get drowned by actual indigestion as opposed to starvation, in the sense that everything else in your life can take a back seat and you get very, very overwhelmed with the amount of things you have to do to be successful in your area of life. And taking control of that morning allows me to control that, because what happens, the reason I get up at 5 a.m. every morning is because I have an hour in the morning that I can take for myself that nobody else is up. There's no messages coming my way. I don't look at my phone for the first 3 hours of the day. And I normally listen to a podcast or an audiobook, and then I do my recovery strategy, which I'm going to get into. But it allows me to own that morning, and it just gives me a mental reset at the start of every day. Also, I'm not a morning person. I fucking hate getting up in the morning. So getting up at 5 a.m. allows me to kind of be moody for the first half an hour, or I don't have to talk to anybody because no one else is awake. And then after I'm up for 20 minutes, half an hour, I kind of kick into gear and I feel normal. But I don't really want to see anybody for the first 20 minutes of the day just because I'm not a natural morning person. I don't want to get out of bed. I want to sleep in. I would be a natural night owl if I was given the choice. But that helps me. So it's one of the reasons that I've doubled down it over the last several years. And then I normally start my creative task at 6 a.m. So right now it is 7:42. So I'm recording this podcast. I'm editing a GA ebook, which will be available on the website later on this year. And again, doing research for the working title, The Life Mindset, which will be a follow-up to the fitness mindset for next year. Again, just in the research stage right now. But I'm putting pen to paper come September. So that's going to be starting to get done. They're all creative tasks that I normally do it 2 hours every morning, which allows me to get a lot of my main priorities done, because from 8 a.m. everyone else is up and I'm getting emails from coaches. I'm getting emails that are coming in from clients that can't be answered, or I'm dealing with business stuff that is working off the rest of the world. And that's kind of the secret to success in terms of getting your own things done. One of the biggest misconceptions I had, not even a misconception, one of the biggest stories that didn't support me that I used for years was the difference between being busy and being productive. Because in, say, 2016, I was so busy all the time. And now I was doing a lot of work. I was working 15, 16 hour days. I was doing a lot of work because I had no team. I had nobody doing anything with my videos. I had no coaches. I had nothing. And I was working it all myself, even online, in an online capacity. And I was always busy, but I wasn't super productive. I was working to everyone else's schedule and I wasn't really creating anything because I was working to everyone else's timeline. When you get up early in the morning and you put your phone down, it allows you to do whatever it is that you need to do in terms of creative. Like, again, if you're working a 9-to-5 in an office, it's relative, but you can own that first hour, listen to a podcast, do some stretching or recovery strategy, which I'll talk about now, and just kind of get control of your thoughts for the day. That compound effect over time has been massive, because now I don't get as stressed, and I have that type A personality that's constantly analyzing the future and things that could go wrong and fucking this and that and the other of, you know, I need to do this or else I can't do that. And taking that first hour in the morning allows me to get control of that thought, that voice, and that mind chatter. And it just allows you to just take a step back, consume a piece of information that supports your day, that allows you to, whatever the bigger goal is, and when you know what your end goal is, either health, wealth, love, or fulfillment, or all four quadrants, however you break your life, whatever buckets that are the most important to you, you can consume something that sets up that thought process. I also do gratitude journal in the morning. I also do a little bit of journaling where I reflect back. I use the Daily Stoic Journal, which is basically just gives you a title, and I have it right here beside me. So for example, May 23rd, can I start living right here, right now, is the trigger question. And then you can write underneath it or ask it. Another one beside it, May 22nd, can I be a good person right here, right now? So there's a theme, and it just allows you to start taking control of your day and reflecting on things that are kind of higher power questions. One of my mentors used to always say to me, smart people have great answers and geniuses have great questions. And when you start your day off either answering those bigger philosophical questions, it makes the little stuff seem less important. The meeting that you have, or the silly stuff that you just doesn't really matter, that you don't really care about, it makes it seem a little bit more insignificant, and that can distress you. Again, from anecdotal personal experience, that can distress you. So that's what I do every morning. The reason I just wanted to frame that and prime that to give you an idea that owning your morning can massively de-stress your life. And I've spoken about it in the past on other podcasts, so I'm not going to flesh it out for 20 minutes here, but it just gives you control. That may be 15 minutes for you, that may be half an hour, that may be the full hour like I take. I take that 5 to 6 a.m. morning slot. Nothing goes into that except for getting up, taking my morning supplements, which I normally do. Normally, some, for example, this morning with some natural nootropics before the podcast, some phytosylserine, some lion's mane, some omega-3 and a probiotic. I take the Udo's Choice probiotic. It's the only one that I can comfortably recommend to people that you take it. It's incredible. And then I use Paul Stamets mushroom lion's mane, natural nootropic, and then the phytosylserine and the omega-3. I normally go with whatever is on the best value at the time on whatever website or shop I'm buying it from. And then I go straight into my recovery strategy. I listen to a podcast. And my morning recovery strategy is straight from my GA Lean Body program. So with my GA Lean Body players, depending on injury history, depending on muscular tightness, there's a recovery strategy in that program. It's slightly different from hurlers to footballers and depending on the version of the program. But what I do is foam rolling. First, I use the Pulse Roll, which is a vibrating foam roller. Absolutely love that one. It's my favorite foam roller, bar none. And I use that first thing in the morning. So I roll normally my calves because they get super tight from running. So I'm up to that 10K mark at the end of my workouts now, building up for next year's Ironman and for a couple of other runs that I'm very, very highly considering entering, just out of the need to push my body to a physical limit. So I'll talk more on that on my Instagram stories as I decide what I'm doing, depending on schedule and appearances elsewhere. And I do my calves first thing because they get so tight from running. Then I do my quads. Then I do my lats, which get really, really tight from a lot of pull-ups. I do a lot of body weight stuff in the gym. And my lats get really, really tight. So I use that foam roller. And the reason people may not get benefit from foam rolling is if you foam roll incorrectly and you're not using myofascial release the way it's supposed to be done, you're not going to get maximum benefit. The reason myofascial release works so well is because if there's tightness on a muscle and it's not able to get blood in between the muscle, if you're just rolling over it and going super quick, going over the entire muscle, it doesn't release anything. And myofascial release is releasing part of the muscle to improve the blood flow. So you want to find the points that are very, very tight where there's restrictions. You'll know there's restriction there because it's sore and tight when you put pressure on it. So when you're on a foam roller and rolling your quads or lats, for example, when you put it on a tender point or a trigger point where it's like, oh, I felt that, that's where you need to increase the blood flow in the muscle because that's where the tightness is. So find where that point is and then minimal movements that are going up and down in an up and down rotational move or up and down movement pattern is what's going to create that myofascial release. That's what gives you the benefit. And I piggyback that with trigger point tension, which is for hamstrings. So I use a slither, but any round ball will do. I'll sit on a chair, I'll put it under my hamstrings, and then I press down as much tension as I could apply on the trigger points in my hamstrings to release everything there. The reason I do it is I get very, very muscularly tight because it's not something I looked after for a long period of my life. I was fucking stretchings for pussies was my kind of thought process, ridiculous thought process, but it was my thought process. Or I was like, stretching's a waste of time. It's not a waste of time. It's something really, really good. And recovery is really, really important regardless of what it is you're trying to achieve. But it also improves your actual body composition. Because when you're in the gym, if you're trying to improve your mind-muscle connection, I spoke about in the fitness mindset in the training section about your mind-muscle connection, connecting your muscle to your mind or mind to your muscle, where you're able to feel the muscle you're working, improved blood flow can help that because it's easier to push blood into that muscle. So when I stay on top of keeping my lats loose and they're not being completely restricted through tightness and there's good improved blood flow in there, when I'm actually trying to contract that muscle, it's easier to get blood in there and I can feel it better and that can change the composition faster because you're loading the muscle you're trying to load and you can change the way that it looks faster because the improvement in the workout and the concentration and contraction of the muscle is far superior than if you didn't do any rolling or blood flow work to get it in there. So I find my body composition changes better. The reason I do it with my GA players is because as they're building up or as they're leaning down, depending on their goal, it's very important that they stay loose because resistance training can tighten up your body. It potentially can. That's one of the old misconceptions in strength and conditioning, that weight training slows you down. And yeah, it can potentially slow you down, particularly if you're tearing fibers down and you're not doing any recovery work with it. That can all affect you negatively. So that's why I do it with those players. And then I normally do traps and chest to loosen everything else out. I'll do trigger points against a wall for lats and chest. And that's what I do every single morning, religiously, Monday to Friday, because it allows me to stay on top of my training. It allows me to double it over with a podcast or an audiobook that supports me. And it gives me that first hour of the day. So one of the things they always say you should do with habits is try and piggyback it back it off of something else you already do. So for example, I was already getting up in the morning and listening to a podcast or listen to an audiobook. Sometimes I would sit down on the couch or sit in a chair, or I'd lie down and I'd listen to it. But I was falling back asleep a lot of the time, so I would have to sit up. But I wanted to try and put this new habit in place of recovery, because I wasn't doing it at the end of my workouts. And even though I'd say I would do it, I was tired at the end of my workouts. I would get hungry, and then I just never spent the time that it needed. Now I'm getting, you know, 15 to 45 minutes every morning, depending on how tired I am, of doing that recovery strategy. And I'm piggybacking it on top of something that I was doing already. So that's what I would try and do for anyone that's trying to put in a recovery strategy. It is important, particularly for athletes. And if you're going to the gym, you're constitute an athlete, or you're in that bracket of athlete, and staying on top of your recovery is important. How much you do depending on how tight you are, depending on your training program, etc. But doing it is important. Some people will do it once or twice a week and that's enough. Some need 7 times a week. Some will do it just at the end of the workouts. And when you do it is nearly irrelevant. For me, it's what works for me in my lifestyle and schedule. So that's when I do it. But again, experiment with it. If you haven't listened to my episode on 12 life experiments that stuck, go check out some of the other experiments that I played around with or that I doubled down and kept, because I do that consistently. It's why if you come back to me in 6 months' time, my morning routine may look completely different, because I'm always tweaking things to try and optimize performance in whatever way that I can. Morning routine, evening routine, training, business, thinking, podcast, whatever it is that I'm doing, I'm trying to optimize performance and figure out what works best. And that's constantly experimenting with things, experimenting with philosophies. You know, I did the no complaint experiment for the month when I came back from Marathon de Sable. I have it on my phone still to this day. I've got a no complaining zone as the photo on my phone to remind me that I'm not complaining for 30 days. Whatever it is, and it's so difficult because complaining is something that, again, Irish English culture, as someone that spent so much time in London as well, it's something that's nearly natural in our DNA to complain about things, the weather, the way life is going, our jobs, our boss, etc. Just try it for a week to not complain about things and see how differently you start to see the world and how hard it is for the first couple of days. And I'm not a negative person by nature, but I would still find myself automatically system one going to complain about something fucking stupid. Like, oh, I'm out of almond milk. You know, I'm going to have to use water in my porridge. Damn it. Like, hide the first world problems. But I'd find myself complaining to my inner talk would be complaining about the situation. You know, try doing that for a month where you're like, oh, well, actually, I get to have water. I get to have food. You know, all these reframes that when you experiment with them, it shows how different everything else starts to show up in your life. And you start to view everything as an experiment. So that 12 life experiments episode, that's probably the main one, because I went through everything in there that I've kept over the last 2-3 years, and how I'm experimenting with certain other things going forward. I advise that for everybody. Look at your life as an experiment. Look at your life as, how can I improve in this area, either through diet or training or relationships or business or the way you see the world, your mindset. Experiment with things. Experiment with podcasts. Experiment with different strategies that you do each day. Tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. If you're constantly experimenting and constantly making things optimized to perform the best that you can perform, supplements you use, nutritional strategies you have, you're going to get results faster when you start to double down on what works. The only way you'll find out is by tasting, and then the way that you get successful is by doubling down on the things that you tasted and that worked. And that all comes from experimenting. My morning recovery strategy was an experiment that stayed. So hopefully that helps, Keen. And for anyone else that was curious about my first 60 minutes of the day. So next question comes in from Colleen Fitness. Could you do a podcast on slowly increasing calories or reverse diets? So I wanted to answer this one because I couldn't remember if I covered this on the podcast before. I think I may have done it some time back, but I think it was in the context of coming back off a photo shoot or a competition, if I'm not mistaken. So reverse dieting for anyone unfamiliar with the term, is normally when you've gone into normally a calorie deficit where you're eating less calories than your body needs, normally when you're trying to lose body fat, and you start to slowly increase them back out because your goals have changed or your circumstances or lifestyles have changed. So for example, if you are 1700-1800 calorie maintenance, where you need to eat 1700-1800 calories to stay the same weight, for example, or body composition, you may be eating 1400 or 1500 calories in that deficit. So you, to reverse diet, you may want to get back up to your 1700, or you may want to go up to 2000 because now you want to build some lean muscle tissue. And slowly increasing that is not that difficult to do, provided that you didn't make a mess of it in the first place. And the reason I say it that way is one of my biggest pet peeves in fitness is the fad diets, the juice diets, the bar diets, the ridiculous calorie restricted diets that people do, purely because it comes from thinking it's the silver bullet and a little bit of lack of knowledge and information and wisdom in the area. Because when you realize that if you go eat 500 calories for the next 2 months, 3 months, and then you try and go back up to your normal 2000 calories, you're going to have a really bad rebound, not to mention the downregulation of certain hormones, your leptin and ghrelin in particular. They're your hunger and satiation hormones, the hormones that tell your body you're hungry or full, and they get downregulated in a massive calorie restricted diet. So provided that you didn't go ridiculously low with your calories. And just to give you context, I've been working in fitness for a long time now, in a one-to-one capacity and in an online capacity for the last several years. And in all my years, and I've worked with overweight girls, overweight guys, I've worked with people in peak elite performances, top intercounty players, and I've worked with people who have been 5% body fat on stage for bodybuilding. I've never dropped anybody below 1,000 calories, ever. In my entire life, I've never dropped someone below 1,000 calories. So that gives you context to, if you drop down below 1,000 calories, you will lose weight and you'll lose body fat probably as well, depending on your starting point. But you lead yourself out to a host of other problems on the other side. And sometimes slowly increasing calories isn't enough to minimize the damage that's been done. I had a girl come through my BKF online program recently who was coming off the back of Slimming World. And she was on a very, very low calorie diet. She was below 1,000 calories and around that 800 or 900 calories. And she wanted to come through my program because she had stagnated there. And I told her before she signed up, and again, she's actually, thankfully now we've got her back on track. But before she signed up, I told her, look, you are going to get worse before you get better. You are 100% going to put on weight for the first few weeks, because she had hit a plateau, she had hit a stagnation point. And I was like, we're going to go from your 800 calories to, we ended up getting up to 1600, but we gradually increased it up. And because of eating real food, because of eating fibrous food and carbohydrate food, complex carbohydrates, she was pulling in more water than the crappy food she'd been eating. And her weight went up. And it wasn't until week 5 and 6 that her body fat started to come back down, because everything gets down-regulated in that extreme calorie-restricted phase where your ghrelin, your leptin, all down-regulated. So you're not hungry or full and your body doesn't know when it's hungry or full. And then you get this cortisol rebound that can come from, oh my God, I'm getting worse, I'm getting worse, I'm getting worse, because you're now eating real food and the scale is going up. So if you're in that case where you want to slowly increase calories or reverse diet, and you've gone really extreme, and you may have gone extreme with broccoli and chicken, you don't have to be with Slimming World or, you know, any other company that reduces down their calories very, very low, or a juice or bar equivalent. You may have done it with chicken and broccoli. That's still ridiculously calorie restricted if you're only eating 800 calories. That has been knowledgeable in the sense that you're probably going to get worse. It is very important that you get a coach or a trainer or a nutritionist who understands what happens to your body when you put it into that extreme deficit for an extended period of time, and that you need to reach, nearly re train your digestive system and your physiology in general to consuming real food again in a normal intake of calories. So if you've done that, it's playing the long game and knowing you're taking one step back to take two steps forwards. If you're not just increasing from a diet where you haven't dropped your calories too low, but you've been clearly in a deficit, what I normally do, and this varies person to person, there's two strategies that I really, really like. One is where you ramp up the calories straight away and then you increase your training because of the spike you get from an increase in calories. So to flesh that out, if you've been at 1600 calories for a deficit and you ramp up to 2,500 calories or 2,300 calories, which is significantly above what you were eating, your energy levels are going to shoot up. And you can take advantage of that by increasing your training output. So either going on to a new program, doing a program that's of higher intensity, either through increase in weight or resistance you're creating, or things like circuits or giant sets, but an increase in intensity all the same. That can get you up, and then you don't get that negative rebound from increasing calories too fast, and then the digestive discomfort that can come from an increase in food, or the water retention that can come from an increase in food when your body's not used to, say, an increase of, you know, nearly 1,000 calories, 800, 900 calories, if you go from 1,600 to 2,300, 2,500. That's a big increase if you're not changing up your training. I like that. I think that can work quite well for people. It's my personal preference. Even when I was competing and tracking calories, that was my personal preference. I used to like to ramp them, and then I used to increase my training as a result, and my training was always better, and I always got a super compensationary effect out the other side that I would grow weak body parts faster or perceived growth them faster because of the amount of blood flow and the amount of pump and the amount of resistance I could create and the improvement in training output because of my increase in calories. So that was my personal preference. The alternative and more traditional is a gradual increase week on week. So if your starting point is 1,600 calories and you want to get up to 2,300 calories, I would probably do that over a 10-week period where every week you increase it by 100 calories. So week one, you're 1,600. Week two, you're 1,700. Week three, you're 1,800. Week four, you're 1,900. And you keep going up until you hit your target calorie intake. This works very well because it doesn't disrupt digestion from a super increased amount in food. It also, you'll minimize any negative impact in, say, fat loss, because it's so metabolically, you're changing your metabolic intake of food slowly and gradually, which means that there's going to be no swing in the pendulum one side and then it goes all the way to the other side, which can happen if you go from 1600 calories to 2,500 calories or whatever your end goal is, and you do it in, say, a week. You can get like a horrible rebound effect where you feel all watery and sluggish and bloated, and assuming that you haven't changed your training in any way, it just may not be the most beneficial way of doing it. But gradually reversing out like that tends to work very well. How you do it is very much down to your nutritional strategy. Some people will increase their carbohydrates, and some people will increase their fats, some will increase their protein, or some will increase a little bit of everything. Whether you do it at one meal or you do it spaced throughout the day, again, it's personal preference. It doesn't matter how you increase 100 calories. You may just eat more sweet potato at dinner. That gives you your 100 calorie increase. You may have a little bit more snacks through the day. That gives you your calorie increase of 100 calories. It doesn't matter how you do it as such. That all comes in alignment with your goals, but it's about finding what works for you. A lot of people will do it with fat or carbohydrates because protein tends to stay pretty moderate, whether you're dieting or trying to improve in terms of building lean muscle tissue. Your protein probably doesn't need to go up or down that much, but you can manipulate your carbohydrates and your fats depending on whether you're more fat adapted or carb adapted. If you're carb adapted, meaning that your body processes and assimilates carbohydrates very effectively and they give you quality energy and you feel great with a higher intake of carbs, I would probably reverse diet out with an increase in carbohydrates. If you're fat adapted, on the other hand, where you work better off fats and your body has a steadier energy increase and you just feel better with a higher intake of fats, I would probably increase in reverse diet with an increase of fat every day, and then do that over a gradual period of 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, whenever it takes you to get from point A to point B. That can all work very effectively. There is no right or wrong way. It's very much down to personal preference. I have my personal preference that I like to do with that massive increase and then an increase in output, but everyone is very, very, very different. And again, I'm safe in the knowledge that I've worked in the field for years and I understand my body. I understand other people's bodies. I can chop and change what works best. So whatever sounds like it's going to be the most stable for you and you're going to be able to apply it straight away and do it to the best of your ability, I would do it that way. And know that you can do it either way and both work very effectively. Okay, next question from Simply Psych Drawings. I started eating better and drinking more water, and after a week I've gained weight. Why is this happening? So I wanted to piggyback these two questions together. I'm not going to spend too long on this one because I think it balances quite well. When you go from eating not a lot of food or eating crappy food, which is junk food, which is normally devoid of a lot of fiber, a lot of sugar, etc. When you start eating better, and when you say better, normally nutrient-dense foods is what I assume people mean. Nutrient-dense foods with more fiber, vitamins and minerals, etc. And you start drinking more water, you can gain weight pretty quickly. Similar to what I said earlier, is purely because gaining weight and gaining body fat aren't the same thing. Losing weight and losing body fat aren't the same thing. Gaining or losing weight is increasing or decreasing the numbers on a scale. So when you step on a scale and you're 80 kilos or 200 pounds and you go to 85 kilos or 250 pounds, that's an increase in weight. When you step on the scale and go from 80 to 75 kilos or 200 pounds to 150 pounds, that's a decrease in weight. That has nothing to do with body composition or body fat. Even though you can sometimes lose body fat, in a lot of cases people will lose body fat and lose weight, but it's not the same thing. Weight is the number increasing or decreasing on a scale. It's a metric of measurement. Losing body fat is losing fat on your body. So increasing or decreasing the fat amount of fat on your body. That's body composition. When you go from eating junk food that is not loaded with fiber and you're not drinking a lot of water, your body composition can go in a pretty poor way. And your weight may stay the same if you're not eating too many calories. So you can eat 2,000 calories of complete junk food, and provided that you're not in a surplus, you'll probably stay around the same weight. And provided that you're not in a deficit, you probably won't lose any weight. But you could eat 1,500 calories. If your maintenance calories is 3,000 calories and you need to eat 3,000 calories to stay the same weight every day, you could eat junk food for 1,500 calories and still lose weight. I was working with a client once, and I've done this sometimes online, where I'll have an overweight or an obese client and we won't change anything in their diet except for, first we'll put them walking in the evenings. I had one girl who all we did on week one was she started walking in the evenings. And she lost a little bit of weight because it was putting her into a deficit because she never walked. Then we fixed her breakfast. And this is something that I have my personal trainers do that are coming through my business programs, is when you're working as a trainer with somebody and you get someone that's overweight or obese, there's no point changing up their nutrition and the habits that they've formed over the last 20, 30 years. You're not going to change that overnight, but you can change one meal and then build off that. What happens with somebody that's overweight and obese, or someone that's carrying a lot of body fat, is they have habits formed that aren't supporting their body compositional goals. And you don't choose your future, you choose your habits, and your habits choose your future. And your habits of eating poor food every day, if you've been doing that for 20 years, I spoke about this in the habit section of the fitness mindset, when you're doing something over a long period of time, it's like roots of a tree. If you've only been doing it for a week or two, it's like planting a seed. You can dig it up pretty quickly. Whereas if it's been grown for 20 years, it turns into a mighty oak tree. That's significantly harder to uproot out of the ground. Your habits are the same. And if you have someone that's been eating poor food, or you've been eating poor food for a long period of time, you're not going to change that overnight. And the analogy I used in the fitness mindset was, if you've been eating poor food all your life, or you've been overweight all your life, you're not going to lose that weight in 6 weeks. It's like if I came to you and said, I want to be fluent in Spanish in 2 weeks' time. You'd be like, it's probably not possible. But if I said, I want to be fluent in 6 months or 12 months or 18 months, you'd be like, yeah, that's way more realistic and possible in the time frame. I'm also a believer that nothing's impossible. The time frame is impossible. And once you set the time frame right in terms of realistic expectation, that's how you can advance people better in what they're trying to achieve. Or if it's you that's that person, you can set yourself up for success. changing everything and trying to make all those changes at once is a recipe or a blueprint for failure, 100%. If you try and get an overweight person, or if you're overweight or obese, or you're not happy with your composition, and you try and change it all overnight, you're not going to be able to do it. The most successful way that I found and experimented with and experienced is setting a small goal, a small target, hitting that and then building that off the back. Confidence is kind of like legs of a table. You may have heard me speak about this in the podcast in the past. It's how I see confidence or whatever it is I'm trying to achieve. Every time you do something that you said you were going to do and you hit a target you said you were going to hit, you build a new or add a new leg to that table. And the more legs your table has, the stronger it's going to be. That's how confidence is. And if you have somebody that has been overweight or obese for a long period of time, and they don't have a lot of confidence, changing up their entire nutritional strategy is not going to help them right now. But building and changing up their breakfast, or as I did in the case of the girl walking around the block, we used that for week one. Week two, then we fixed her breakfast and then left everything else. I was like, look, you can eat your Maltesers and you can eat your Domino's in the evening, but I want you to eat your, you know, protein pancakes or your porridge or whatever it was that we decided she was going to eat in each morning for your breakfast. And then the following week or 2 weeks later, we changed it and got her lunch right. And then we got her dinner. And then before we knew it, in the space of 2 months, she had a really good nutritional strategy that we built base by base. There was a great story in the interview that I had with James Swanwick, who was a celebrity interviewer when he was interviewing Will Smith. And he spoke about when Will Smith and his brother were younger, his father knocked a wall outside the back of their business and got him and Will Smith and his brother to build it back up. And he said that when you're building a wall, you don't focus on building the biggest, baddest wall in the world. You focus on laying a brick as perfectly as that brick can be laid. And that's how building confidence is. It's getting one thing that you get right and then building off the back of that and doing that consistently over time. And the reason I share that is the reframing of knowing the difference between gaining weight and gaining body fat, in combination with the fact that you may go backwards initially for that reason, and then knowing that doing the right things gradually, what you're doing right now, eating better, drinking a bit more water, and not getting caught up in using the weight as the vanity metric or the metric for success, the scale metric for success, in terms of I need to lose weight or gain weight and then I'll be successful, or then I'll be, you know, I'll have the body I want. When you reframe that as I need to lose body fat and I need to change the way that I look, and you realize that what you do every day is what's going to set that up, and setting up the small wins of, yes, I'll eat right today, I'll drink more water today. And after a week, you do that for the following week and you constantly build on that. That's what's going to help you long term. And the increase in gain in weight is normally down to the amount of water that you have in your body now. So weight, obviously, the more water you have, the more carbohydrate you have, the more fiber you have, the more water you'll pull into your body, the more you're going to weigh. But your body composition may be changing. So the mindset angle of the success metric needs to change, because when you're using it as weight as the success metric of I need to lose weight or gain weight, there's lots of variables that come into play there. If I weigh myself in the morning when I'm fasted, I'm about 3 kilos lighter than I am at the end of the day. That's how most people are, because you've ate your meals, you've got your sodium, you've got your water. So it doesn't take into account how your composition has changed. So a long way of kind of expanding out, and I went off in a different direction with this question completely, just to give context of using small targets as building blocks for building a wall and setting out and doing the right things every day. Tell me what you do every day, I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. And that's what's, when you change that success metric of I want to lose body fat and change my composition, and because you've started eating better and you're drinking more water and you've gained weight, it's going to be very, very easy to think that what you were doing in the past was right, quote unquote right. When I say right or wrong, I mean in the context of what you were doing was in alignment and supportive of what you were trying to achieve. There is no right or wrong, but in the context of what you're trying to achieve, there is a right or wrong. And to not get caught up in your own head, the fact that you're started eating better, just make sure you're in that calorie deficit, that you're not eating too many calories. keep drinking your water and change your mindset and change your success metrics of what it is that success looks like, that you're changing composition. Because generally when I offer somebody, and the reason that girl came into my head was when I talk to people that say, well, I want to lose 3 stone, and they don't have 3 stone to lose, but they've got body fat to lose. I'll ask them, I'll go, okay, why do you want to lose 3 stone? They'll tell me, well, I want to fit into this dress. And I go, okay, what if we only lost 1 stone, but you dropped 3 dress sizes? Would you take that? And they'll be like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'll take that. And that's normally what happens. Or the extreme case of that is I'll say, okay, what if we stayed the same weight right now, but you dropped 3 dress sizes? Or you aren't able to fit into that dress, but we dropped 3 stone, which would you take? And they'll tell you every day of the week they want to drop the dress sizes and stay the same weight. That's just a way of reframing it in your head, or reframing it with a client if you're a trainer. And when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. When your success metric changes and you realize that the things you're doing every day, like eating the right food and drinking more water and exercising more, training more, is all leading you towards that end goal, and you are setting these small targets and small success targets and components along the way, that's what's going to set you up long term. Any area of your life. That's business, that's fitness, that's relationships, that's success principles in general. So hopefully that helps, and hopefully my sidetrack kept you engaged and allowed you to get a little bit of a broader view on that one. So I hope it helped. Okay, next question. Any tips for motivation? So motivation is up there with one of my other biggest pet peeves, purely because motivation is absolute horseshit in terms of using it to get you to where you want to be. Motivation is temporary. Motivation can change with a light switch. Motivation can come and go depending on the music you're listening to. That's not what gets you to where you want to be. What gets you to where you want to be is the habits that you form, what you do every day. Tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. And as I spoke earlier, you don't decide your future, your habits decide your future, and you decide your habits. Motivation, yes, you can listen to a song or a motivational video, or you can listen to somebody that fires you up and it can get you going. And I'm of the personality type that I can light a fire under people. I'm aware that I can get very, very deep and very, very heavy on the motivational side to get somebody going. But that doesn't keep anybody going. It's what you do. Whatever your end goal is, your relationship. I break it into 4 quadrants. Health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. Whatever your end goal is in those areas of your life, your health, your wealth, your love, your fulfillment, what you do every day that makes you jump out of bed. Motivation will get you started, but it doesn't keep you going. When you want to run more, when I wanted to start running for Marathon de Sable, the 250-kilometer self-sufficient run to the Sahara that I ran in April, motivation didn't do that. My habits did that, because I don't want to fucking run. I hate to run. And motivation doesn't do that. I can put on a headset and I can put on my favorite song. I can put on some Eminem, Lose Yourself, or Till I Collapse, which are my 2 tunes of choice. And I can put those on and yes, I feel super motivated for 4 or 6 minutes. And then that dies away. But what I had built into my routine was running 10 or 20 kilometers every day. I had built into my routine running 50 to 100 kilometers every week consistently, tapering up and down. I built that into my routines. The University of London says it takes 66 days to form a new habit. And after about 2 months, I built it into my routine that whether I was tired, whether I was sick in terms of a head cold or a runny nose, whether I was sore, whether I didn't want to do it, whether I did want to do it, I still fucking did it. The difference, and this is my, that I've tattooed on my brain, the difference between successful people and the quote unquote successful people, whatever success looks like for you, for me, success is having the life you want and living it on your terms. The difference between successful people and unsuccessful people is successful people do what they have to do whether they want to do it or not. That's it. Successful people do what they have to do whether they want to do it or not. That's it. That's it. There's nothing else to it. It's deciding what the end goal is. And I'm so big And if you've been listening to the podcast, you're probably sick of me fucking talking about this. I'm so big on setting the end goal because you can't hit a target you can't see and you can't work towards something that you can't see. If you don't know what you're trying to hit, if you don't know what you want, you'll take whatever you get. So you got to set what the end goal is in whatever area of your life that's most important to you because then you can work towards it. But it's what you do every day that gets you there. You can have these moments of motivation. I may be talking now and it's lighting you up to go fucking do the thing you need to do. That will work temporarily, but it doesn't get you to the end goal. When you know what you want to achieve and you do it every day whether you want to or not, that's what fucking gets you there. The key to success, ordinary things done consistently well lead to extraordinary results. That's it. You combine those two things with the thought process of the successful people do what they have to do whether they want to or not. That's it. You put those two things together, you can achieve fucking anything in your life. Because it isn't the extraordinary things. It isn't the one blog post. It isn't the one Instagram post. It isn't the one training session. It isn't the one meal. It's what you do consistently over time is what leads to your greatness or leads to success in the area of your life that you're trying to achieve that success in. That's what does it. Ordinary things done consistently well lead to extraordinary results. Hammer that into your brain because it's not a secret. There is no silver bullet. There is no magic pill. You don't have to fucking do extraordinary things. You just have to do the ordinary things regularly and consistently well over time. You want to be in amazing shape? Do the things consistently well over time. When you eat the right meals, you know you're not eating fucking McDonald's 3 times a week or you're eating McDonald's 3 times a day and you know that you're doing workouts that are in alignment with your goal and you're doing that consistently over time and then you're fucking patient, that's what's going to give you the success. Getting in shape, and I'll use that as the example. Getting in shape is very, very difficult at the beginning. To get a six pack or to get into the body composition that you want, it's difficult in the beginning. It's like getting a heavy merry-go-round to go at the beginning. If you're trying to push a merry-go-round that weighs a fucking ton, that's going to take a lot of effort in the beginning. You're going to have to pull it, you're going to have to push it, you're going to have to drive everything you can. But once that merry-go-round gets moving, it's very easy to stay on top of it because all it takes is a little bit of leverage where you swing it every few minutes and it keeps going around and around and around and around. That's what your habits are like. They're fucking difficult at the beginning. Making change is hard. It's the reason we don't fucking do it. It's because it's difficult. Nobody wants to make a change in the area of their life. Nobody wants to lean into the discomfort of why do I think this way, or why am I in a relationship, or why don't I have the body I want, or why don't I have the job I want? Because it's fucking difficult. Life is fucking hard. You need to build calluses on your mind and reframe that discomfort is a good way to live. Live your life in a state of perpetual discomfort and you'll have all the things that you want. If you do what is easy, your life will be hard, and if you do what is hard, your life will be easy. That's making a consistent choice every day to lean into discomfort, making a consistent choice every day to choose suffering and know that it's going to help you in some way, shape or form. I try and do it every single fucking day where I push my body to a limit. I'll use myself as my own example, and I may sound like a fucking twat saying this, but I use myself as an example. The reason I try and make myself sick when I work out is because I'm leaning into that discomfort. I'm making myself fucking suffer in the gym because it makes everything in my life easier. When I'm feeling uncomfortable in a relationship, when I'm feeling uncomfortable with having to deal with a situation in business, I'm using the reference point of the gym and the discomfort I felt when I thought I was going to get sick on a treadmill or I thought I was going to get sick under a squat. I use that as a reference point for the growth comes out that side. The life is better out that side because I'm leaning into the things that I don't want to do. Nobody wants to go under 170 kilos on a fucking squat. Nobody wants to run fucking 10 or 20 kilometers at the end of a workout. Nobody wants to fucking do that. But you do it and you end up becoming stronger, or you end up reframing it that you have a positive association with it because it makes you psychologically stronger. One of the things that has helped me more than anything is seeing psychological transformation through physical suffering. That's why I ran Marathon de Sable. It's why I fucking run now. It's why I do these things. I've dealt with mental health in the past. I've dealt with fucking depression. I've dealt with anxiety. I've dealt with comparison. I've dealt with all these fucking things that made me miserable every day when I got out of bed and made me question my fucking existence on this planet. I chose to fucking own that. I chose to own that. I chose to control it. And I chose to fucking change it. Psychological transformation through physical suffering. Using it as a reference point and as an anchor, because every time I fucking suffer in the gym, Every time I suffer with something that makes me feel horrible and in the most uncomfortable position, running through the desert, running 20 kilometers at the end of a leg workout, these things that I use as anchors for everything that I do in my life. How you do anything is how you do everything. That is going to be the key. When you do that every day and you live your life in a perpetual state of discomfort and you choose to do the things that are hard because you want your life to be easy, that's what makes you come out the other side. I've gone through my life a victim. I've been through the fucking mental health. I've dealt with depression. I've dealt with anxiety. I've dealt with comparison. I've dealt with all this fucking outside external victim mentality where I thought the world was against me because my fucking this person didn't love me or this person didn't fucking give me the attention I needed. They're all fucking stories. They're victim mentality stories that you may be telling yourself, and you can hear the animation in my voice because I'm speaking to myself. So apologies if it's not resonating, and fucking kudos, and I hope it is. It's speaking to myself because I fucking dealt with it. That's motivation. It's making the fucking choice to do it whether you want to do it or not. That's what successful people do. And I'm not saying that I'm successful, but in my terms of subjective success, for me, I'm success because I've got calluses on my mind that make me stronger because I do the things I don't want to do. I do the things I have to do even when I don't want to do them. Ordinary things done consistently well lead to extraordinary results. Tattoo that on your mind. Live your life in a state of perpetual discomfort, whatever that is for you. Reading more. Going for a walk after work, being more present with your kids, doing meditation, doing mindfulness, whatever it is you need to do that makes you a better version of you, live in that discomfort. And when you do, I promise everything will change. And doing it every day, whether you want to do it or not, that's what success is. Your habits are what define you. Not your motivation, not the music, not the short term, not this fucking podcast. This will give you motivation for now, but it's what you do every day. That's what's going to determine where you go. Tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. It can be that simple sometimes. And that comes down with owning it. That comes down with making the choice. And that's the only difference. And you can hear the animation in my voice and I'm speaking to myself. And sometimes the reasons these land with people is because I'm speaking to myself. And they're always the ones I fear pressing publish on because they're the vulnerable parts. They're the intimate parts that I don't like people hearing. But I do it because your mess becomes your message. And I know that because I needed to fucking hear it. That's a way of seeing it. That's making a choice. That's all it is. And anybody can do it. Ordinary people live extraordinary lives by making a choice to do the things they don't want to do, even though, or doing the things they have to do, even when they don't want to do them. That's what you do. And then it's just habits after that. Your habits define you. That's my piece of advice. Motivation, it's not going to keep you going. It can get you lit up for a temporarily moment in time. And yeah, it will do that and use that as a tool. It's a tool in the toolkit. I've got my songs that I use, but do it every day. I promise you, if you do something every day that makes you suffer a little bit or makes you uncomfortable a little bit in the gym or reading or conversations with loved ones, whatever it is that makes you uncomfortable, you will be stronger out the other side. That's my advice for motivation. That's my tips for motivation. Not a fucking song, not a podcast, not a video that you need to watch. That. Transform your mind. Build calluses on your mind. Make yourself stronger. Psychological transformation through physical suffering. I fucking lived it. And some of you may not resonate because some of you have no problem with mental health. Some of you will. I came out the other side and I'm choosing to live my life this way from now on. That's choice because you choose how you choose to see it. It's all on you. You own it, control it, and when you control it, you can change it. That's what I would do for motivation. That's my tips. Not a video, not a podcast, not a song. It's your habits. It's what you do every day. Tattoo on your brain. Write it down right now. Put it in your phone. What you do every day, that's what's going to determine your success. Not the motivational tools that you have. Define who you want to be. Make the decision. When you know what the end goal is, do something every day that moves you to that end goal. It doesn't matter how slowly you go. Step by step, you get ahead. You can crawl. I don't fucking care. But every day, I don't care who tells you you can't. I don't care what the outside world or circumstances throw at you. You keep moving forward. You put one foot in front of the other, metaphorically or figuratively, and you keep moving forward. You get knocked back down, you get up again. Somebody fucking knocks you, you get up again. Somebody slates you or drives at you or calls you a fucking name or calls you something on social media, you get back up again. That's the difference. That's ordinary things done, extraordinary results. By ordinary things is moving forward day by day, step by step. That's ordinary. You don't have to do anything else. You do that consistently and it'll lead to extraordinary results. That much, I fucking promise. Okay, so a little bit of a heated one towards the end of the podcast, a little bit of a trend. I know I went off on one a couple of times last month as well. So again, I don't know if it helps, and apologies for the excessive swearing. I know some of you kind of know the format now at this stage, that if I get talking on one of these questions, it may lend itself to me going off on a massive rant, normally down to conversations that I'm having with myself. I did a podcast 2 months ago, how to deal with negative people. And there was parts where I completely lit up and went off on one, similar to last month's one on mental health issues. I just completely went off on it because I was speaking to myself. Like, you can tell that a lot of it is stuff I needed to hear. And the only reason I keep putting it out is because of the feedback that comes back from people, because it's very raw. And it's stuff that I don't like publishing. Like, I still don't. I'm not going to lie. I don't like putting it out there. It's stuff that makes me very, very vulnerable and intimate. And you question it. But it's the reason that I know that it needs to go out. Because the person that needs to hear it, for the, you know, 10,000 people that download, the 9,999 may not land. But one person, it'll change their life. So I put it that way. Because I know that had I heard it when I was 23, 24... you know, 26, 27 for some cases, it would have helped. So I wanted to push it out that for that reason. So that's the end of today's episode. So I hope you enjoyed it. If you haven't left a review on iTunes, please leave a review on iTunes. If you don't, I will never talk to you forever, ever, and I'll never be your friend ever. That's not true. I'll totally be your friend, but I'll be more of your friend if you leave a review on iTunes or tag me in your stories on Instagram. That literally makes my Monday and Fridays when I see it tagged across. So if it's on your stories, be sure to tag me if you're listening. And a massive thank you again for listening. Catch you all next week.
Quick message before you head off. Just letting you know, my best-selling book, The Fitness Mindset, is now available on Audible and all major audiobook apps. If you're like me and love listening to books while you travel or work out, be sure to go to audible.co.uk or audible.com to check out the audio version of The Fitness Mindset. You can listen to a 3-minute sample on there, or you can download the full book. Also, last thing before you leave, if you try Clean Cut Meals, the sponsor of today's episode, be sure to enter the code BKF at the checkout to get your 20% off your first order. Clean Cut Meals are doing all my food for my next adventure challenge coming early next year. I'll be announcing more about that during next month's podcast, and I'm just waiting on medical clearance. Yikes. So stay tuned for that. And remember, code BKF at the checkout for 20% off your first order. Catch you all next.